You're listening to Psych Talk.
I'm your host on Psych Talk, Jose Dras Lopez. Today we have a storyteller in to tell about a very personal, puzzling, and moving experience. Rita Berman is a freelance writer living in Chapel Hill. She's the author of The A to Z of Writing and Selling, and she just published Still Hopping, Still Hoping, a biography of Carla Shuford, a longtime amputee who also lives in Chapel Hill. She had an out-of-body experience in August of 2008 when she was having heart valve replacement surgery. And Rita, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you, Jose. Well, I suppose I should begin by saying that as a freelance journalist, I'm used to interviewing and writing. But it was months before I could write about the strange experience of being outside of my body after a valve replacement in August of 2008. It's not something I have forgotten, nor do I have a satisfactory explanation for what happened, but it definitely had a profound effect on me, even to the present day. As a child, I was hospitalized in London with diphtheria when I was 8 years old. I also had scarlet fever when in the hospital, and that apparently damaged my aortic valve. I was unaware of the damage until after the birth of my first child, when a skillful doctor listened and heard that I had a heart murmur. Nothing was done about it, and years passed, and apparently the damage progressed. By summer 2008, my daily activities were limited. I love walking. I'm pretty do exercise, I go to the gym, but I could hardly walk when I went down to the beach with my daughter. And so I spoke to my cardiologist and I was referred to the heart surgeon at UNC. I learned I needed open heart surgery to replace the aortic valve with the pig valve. So I entered hospital August 12th. I expected to be in intensive care for a couple of days and then go to a regular ward for a few more before discharge. During the operation, it appeared there were some setbacks. I was put on the heart-lung machine during the op, which is normal apparently, and then a temporary pacemaker was put in to jump-start the heart. Well, while still in the operating room, the pacemaker flared out, as they say. It failed, so they had to insert a different one, and that made the operation longer. Later on, on the intensive care ward, I recovered well enough to walk around the floor for a day or two. And a few days after the operation, my surgeon arranged for the temporary pacemaker line to be removed. This was done while I was in the hospital room. Hours later, while sitting in bed talking to my daughter, I suddenly felt ill. I couldn't see in color anymore. I said, "Jessica, what's happening? I can't see you in color." And then, as I say, everything was black and white. And then suddenly my vision deteriorated to little dots. It was just like what you see on a television screen when the channel isn't coming through. So Jessica looked at the monitoring equipment that was behind me. It showed my blood pressure was dropping fast. She rushed out of the room, and apparently it was then that my heart stopped. I blacked out. Fortunately, my surgeon was still making rounds with his team. They rushed in to resuscitate me. Now, I didn't know about that, but I suddenly felt a bump. I found myself up against the ceiling. I looked down. I was out of my body, and yet I could see. Well, on looking down, I saw my body on the bed with the surgeon and the team working on my bare chest. And then I thought, well, I must be dead or dying. I wonder what'll happen next. And then I remembered reading that some people had seen a light at the end of a tunnel. So I looked around to see, well, where's the light? There wasn't any. When I looked ahead, away from the scene below, all I saw was a black void. Where are the people to greet me, I wondered. Well, I thought, Ezra, my dead husband, where is he? He's not waiting for me here. And then I went through the people I knew who were dead already. Where's my mother? My father? Isn't anyone here? In desperation, I thought, well, what about Shadow, my cat, who was also dead? Nothing. Black right ahead of me. Then I looked down into the room, and there again was my body, and they were still working on me. And I knew I had a choice. My choice was I could go into the black void ahead of me. It would be the end of everything. Or I could return to my body down below. Now, all this time, I felt very calm. I was not disturbed in any way, maybe a little curious, you could say. But I thought, if I went back into my body, life might still offer adventures. It might be more exciting. It certainly would be more exciting than the black void. So at that, I decided to go back, and I swooped down into my body, into the right side of my body between the ribs, and I really felt myself swoop in. The next thing I remember was looking up into the eyes of my surgeon. He was saying to me, stay with me, stay with me. Now, I must say, he was a handsome man, and I felt myself looking at him, and I said, oh, yes, and I came back. Well, I must have passed out then after that, because I don't remember a little bit then, but when I woke up, there was a big pack on my neck. I was tied down with more tape and things. There was a temporary pacemaker outside of my body this time. When the surgeon came round in the evening, I think it was for the rounds, I told him what had happened and what I'd seen from the ceiling. I tried to get a response from him. He said he was glad, but that's all he said. He offered no explanation. With my heart stopped, he said I had complete heart block. There would have not have been any brain activity. And I puzzled, how about seeing after I lost my vision then? The next day, still struggling with what had happened, I spoke to one of the nurses. She said she believed me because she said she had a similar experience after a car accident. She agreed there was no way I could have seen what I described without some part of me being out of my body. Well, while I was still in intensive care, they tried to wean me from the temporary pacemaker. They checked to see, arranged things and turned it off now and then, but they couldn't wean me from it. Apparently, the AV node was damaged when the valve was replaced. So the bottom and top chambers of my heart were not in sync. I needed to have a permanent pacemaker installed. Couldn't walk around with that big lumpy thing on my neck, and nor could I leave the hospital. Well, I was very reluctant to have another operation, but as I had elected to come back, I had to proceed. So a few days later, I had the operation, and eventually I came out of intensive care onto the regular ward and went home. But before that, when I told my daughters, they both came to see me in the hospital, I said I wasn't going to tell anybody else because they might think I was crazy. Because I was even questioning, did it really happen? It just was something I couldn't grasp. But I did talk about it. My friends who know me know that it would be very hard for me not to talk. And so within a short time, I was telling my dentist what had happened and this one. And because I was all the time seeking an explanation. About a month after I returned home, I went to the animal shelter and adopted a lovely black and white kitten. I felt, obviously, I had come back for a reason. Therefore, this cat was in the shelter and probably would be euthanized, so I should save something, save her life. I call her Minnie because she looks just like a cat our family had when I was a little girl. I went through an excellent 12-week cardio rehab program, and I picked up my life again. But all the time, still wondering, trying to make sense of the experience. At the same time, I felt that I had received a special gift, because I was able to choose. And I felt I must have come back for a reason, that I was still needed here. I don't have children or grandchildren at home. And so, you know, I felt I was still needed in some way. Well, the other thing that I've thought about is I feel I'm a different person. I'm much calmer and more accepting of other people and of what happens. I seem to have time to listen to what they have to say, all the time in the world, in a way. I also feel less driven to get things done. So my pace of life, even though I'm very busy still doing lecturing, preparing, doing research, and very involved, was volunteering at the schools and other things, it's as if I have all the time in the world. But I do know one thing, that for me, when I die, it will be over. For me, there's nothing but a black void.
Wow. Well, the first thought I have about that black void is, what was your predominant feeling as you were floating there? It seems like there was some kind of frustration, even desperation. Was it more negative or positive?
No, it was not frustration or desperation. It was curiosity, Jose. Oh, possibly because being a writer, I'm very curious about all sorts of things. And I think it was just that I was looking. At the same time, I was supported up at the ceiling. My back was at the ceiling. That's what I bumped. That's what I felt. I didn't feel like I was going to fall down. But I was highly curious. And although I had read very little about out-of-body experiences, what I had read was, or heard, was that people see a light, they go through the tunnel, they see a light, and sometimes people greet them. And so that was when I then thought, well, who is here to greet me? But when I looked ahead, whether I looked to the left or the right or what, it was all black, black, black. It was almost as if I was in a black room, you might say.
Once you came to that point where you had your curiosity and you really thought, looking around, this really is all black, there wasn't a moment of sort of sadness or disappointment there?
Yes, possibly. I did feel a little bit let down, although I'd never been brought up to think that there was a hereafter and that I would see all my family again. But you see, I loved my husband very much. And he had been dead more than 10 years at that time. I missed him terribly. So if I was going to see anybody, he's the one I wanted to see.
Right.
And so, as I say, the desperation was, in the end, looking for my former cat that died after my husband died. The cat also got cancer. So anyway, but nobody was there. I had no comfort. You might say that I would have gone willingly into it if they had been there. I would have gone into that black void, but nobody. And then, as I say, when I looked down, there was my body, and they were working on it, you know. So I felt that was my choice, black, nothing, or get back into that body, you see.
Well, it seems to me there are lots of ways to think about it. Maybe it wasn't your time, and the next time you see the void, there will be people there.
Well, that's what who I've spoken to, a few people about this, and they have said it wasn't your time. I don't accept that. That gives me no comfort at all. I think, you know, you have to feel it. You have to be very brave, in a way, to think that this is all there is. Often, when we think about a hereafter, that we see our loved ones again, that's a comfort to us, a solace in order to live here and now. But see, I'm not living with that. I am living everything at the moment, talking to you, talking about this. This is a great experience. And so that's what I'm enjoying, that you might say that I now have a renewed enjoyment in my life, because I know for me there is nothing, as I say, after this.
Right. Yeah, and there's a certain sort of different way of savoring the life you have now when you think about it that way.
Very true. Yeah. Mm. Now, I've told my friends, I make a joke about it, that when I decided to dive back into the body, see, I wondered, why couldn't I have dived back to the body I was when I was 21? I had to get back into the old body. I had no choice there.
Yeah. Can't get everything we want when we're having out-of-body experiences. Okay, well, you know, what strikes me about this feeling that there is a reason to come back and you were needed and you'd really seen something with some kind, on some almost spiritual plane and come back with a renewed understanding. There's something very satisfying about that. And at the same time, that makes me a little wary because I wonder, even if you could find the best neuroscientist physiologist to walk in and say, we've been studying your case very carefully and we think this is similar to some kind of dream or hallucination, and here are all these reasons and here are all these factors that affected it. It's just more of a mechanistic sort of explanation that's more boring and not as satisfying no matter how detailed it is, right?
Right. Well, I have been asked or suggested to me that it was like a dream. And my dreams, I must say, have always been very, very vivid. And I dream in dialogue. And I often wake up and you know, I can recall the conversations and everything. So this was not a dream. I feel I got some comfort in a way. It's been 4 years now. I like myself more. This new Rita, to me, is a much nicer person than the one who was around before. I used to be very judgmental, and now I'm not. I know that there's a lot of things that we can't explain, and things happen, as they say.
Would you go as far as to say that you wish the near-death experience happened earlier in your life?
Early in life. Well, I mean, I could have had it. See, my husband's been dead now 19 years. So, okay, if I'd have had this experience earlier, maybe 15 years ago, I might have saved myself some unhappiness in a way. Because I did, I was very lost looking and wondering what will my life be like. I had to make a new life. And my father, who lived to be 94, when I would call him up in England, I was, of course, here, and I'd be very unhappy. And he'd say, oh, Rita, make a new life. And I think I would have been easy if I could have made the new life earlier. I would have had more satisfaction, you might say.
Right. Well, grieving is hard for everyone.
Yes, grieving is very hard, and everybody takes a different pace, different time. There's no set pattern to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's one last part of the episode that I want to touch on quickly, which is finally the operations are finished. You're doing your rehab program, and you bounced over the fact that it was 12 weeks long, right?
I do want to talk about that rehab because that was very, very good. It's out at Miramont. UNC does it. And we had about a dozen or more people are in the program. You go there three times a week. You have a certain exercises. They watch you. They monitor you. Every patient seems to have two people. One may be a nurse and one is a volunteer standing by them while they're walking on the treadmill and doing all these things. And one of the things they offered, too, was they had a psychologist talk to us for those who wanted. And she asked the group, we got together, and she raised the question of the out-of-body experience. Now, there were about a dozen of us in that, and would you believe that nearly half a dozen, maybe five or six people, had an out-of-body experience as well, and they talked about it. But the interesting thing that some of them was just a minute or two, some of them, they saw somebody who said, go back, you see. But mine was the longest one, the most involved thoughts, and was the one that had nothing to offer me. The others did see. They saw the light, the tunnel, I mean, some of the what they call classic signs. And so, again, there was no real explanation. But I have read and heard that a number of patients who are either during the operation or later, that this is not uncommon to sort of lose consciousness like this maybe and feel you're out of your body or something. But as I say, mine seemed to be more negative than anybody else's. And that could be because of the religious aspect. Somebody asked me that. that, you know, did it depend on my religion? And I felt it possibly could have done, that I was never brought up that there was a hereafter. You know, I'm Jewish, and we believe that life is now, and you do your best here on earth. We don't think of, at least not the circle I was in, did not offer any hope for afterwards. So. Yeah.
So I'm trying to think of this variety of near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences you heard from mm-hmm. these other recovering patients, and I'm wondering what you make of the validity of their experiences compared to yours. Would you take them as just as true as what you experienced?
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. I think they all, whatever it was, they experienced it. I believe in it, you see. I believe it happened. Whereas I've argued with a friend or two of mine and who say it never happened. There's a physiological reason for all this, Rita. And that you were just, your brain was working on it. You weren't really dead.
That surgeon, the quiet one who didn't say much, the handsome one.
He's the only heart surgeon in Chapel Hill at UNC.
Oh, okay.
Dr. Sheridan.
Did Dr. Sheridan, even though he didn't really speak about the out-of-body experience itself, did he say something about whether you were brain dead at some point or what your brain activity was like?
Ah, good point. No, he didn't say that. He didn't say I was brain dead. And I guess there is a difference between having your heart stopped and whether your brain dead. I guess your heart could stop 10 minutes or more without any damage. That's why they try to bring you back quickly. Brain dead means that though parts of your body may still be functioning, your brain is not working anymore. I did have end-of-life instructions, and I can remember very clearly when I was checked into the hospital, the nurse said to me, you want to be resuscitated, don't you, if something were to happen during the operation or something. And I remember at that point, this is all before all this, I sat there and I thought, do I? And then, because, you know, I could come back and not have my full brain, you might say. As I paused, my daughter and the nurse both looked at me and nodded their heads and said, you do want to come back, don't you? And I said, oh, yes. See? And then later, I was given that choice. That's the odd part. Oh, it's a mystery, Jose. There's no way, there's no right or wrong at this or anything, but all I can say is this was my experience, and I'm not sorry I had it. I don't regret it at all. In fact, as I say, I feel it's a gift because I can evaluate things, and I don't know, it just seems great that I came back.
Well, Rita Berman, thanks so much for still being with us and for being here on the radio to tell us about it.
Thank you, Jose.
You're listening to WCOM, and this was Psych Talk. We were speaking with Rita Berman, who's a freelance writer living in Chapel Hill. She spoke to us about her out-of-body experience in August of 2008. We're online at psychtalkradio.com. That's psychtalkradio.com. Thanks.